Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children 18 plus, you are tuned in to the Loan Officer Podcast with me, Dustin Owen, and a very special guest. We are recording live from Scottsdale, Arizona. We are at Housing Wire's big event, The Gathering. He is all the way from California. When he is not on a basketball court, you can see him on CNBC giving economic updates because he makes charts and graphs fun. He is my new friend, Housing Wire's lead analyst, Logan Motoshami. Logan, yeah. Welcome to Loan Officer Podcast.
Good to be here.
Yeah, I warned you, right? A little bit loud, a little bit obnoxious.
Bring it. I'm louder than obnoxious the most.
Yes. And from reading your bio and following you, I've been following you myself for at least the past two, if not 3 years. I was stoked when you became more and more involved in Housing Wire, and you are today their lead analyst,
yes.
Right? But not an economist.
Analyst, economist, data nerd. I'm just a big geek.
I was curious about that. Like, I used to call you an economist, and I can go back to calling you an economist, and I even say to people, hey, you have to follow Logan over at Housing Wire. He makes the economy fun, which is difficult to do. But then I was reading up on your bio, and I saw they called you a lead analyst. I was thinking, do you have to have a special designation to call yourself an economist?
You know, I track economic cycles first, and then housing is kind of like a secondary for me. So an economist studies the economy. So in that sense, I would be an economist because it's not just housing and mortgage rates or anything. It's the general U.S. economy and then the global economy and commodities and all the nerdy stuff that normal people don't like to do. But I try to do it and keep it a little bit flashy and make it fun for everyone.
Yeah, because you were a lender by trade, right? Like,
yes,
quarter century lending. You're like third generation lender.
Our family's been in banking since the late 1950s. My father opened up his own mortgage company in 1987. He used to run the Bank of America branches in Newport Beach, Beverly Hills, and Santa Monica. And then I kind of got into the business in late 1990s. I was actually going to be a high school basketball coach and teach history.
I saw you have your degree in history.
Yeah, that was the plan. And then they said, you're going to make $26,000 as your salary in year for that. I was like, living in Irvine?
Not possible. Yeah.
Got into the financials. And then about 2010, a financial website called Benzinga asked me if I wanted to write about political economics. And I was like, no, I hate politics. Politics is the word itself. Politics, many blood-sucking parasites. So then I said, I could write about real estate. And then kind of one thing led to another. This was all by accident. And then by 2015, I said, you know what? I'm going to do this the right way, but I'm going to have to track the economic cycles with housing, okay, not just the housing market. So then it became a more prolific data run for me. And then I've been waiting for like years 2020 to 2024 for like 14 years. That's my demographic patch that I've been waiting for. And then COVID happened. You know, so I think what a lot of people know me for is on April 7th, 2020, I wrote a COVID-19 recovery model saying that we're going to recover in 2020 with all these graphs and things that are going to happen with dates. Housing Wire at first thought, maybe we shouldn't publish this, you know, because it's kind of crazy.
And
you know,
were you on with Housing Wire full time?
I just got in just a few weeks. So I said, yeah, just go ahead and publish this. This will work. The whole model worked out perfectly. Housing didn't crash. And then it just became this, you know, a more bigger stage, at least for my work.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can almost call that your coming out party.
Yeah.
Except for this, when I was doing my background, I saw a picture of you baby faced.
Yeah.
Shorter, darker hair.
Oh, yeah.
No beard.
No beard.
But you were on, I think it was either Fox Business or CNBC.
No, it was, my first actually TV stuff was 2013. Bloomberg, okay, and then CNBC. So I've been doing this for a while, but when I got into Housing Wire at the start of 2020, I retired. So I was just doing economic work. So I could spend a little bit more time being more prolific at it. And then the calls were just right, but it's not so much about being right, it's the why factor. So the way I try to explain economics is to be a little bit more fun, a little bit more, you know, edgy, but also try to connect with normal people.
Yes.
Like I'm like that guy like 500 years ago they put down in a dungeon. I get candles and I read scrolls. But now social media, everything, you gotta, you know, kick it up a little bit. So hopefully what I've tried to do over years is connect the dots. I always tell people, be the detective, not the troll. Economics can be fun. And my job is to teach it. Because if I teach it, then everybody else should finish my sentences for me. And it should be easier to understand.
Well, I am a student, and you are perfect for our audience. Because that is what we do here. Like, I talk about emphatically to where our hardcore fans are probably like, oh my gosh, he's going to say it again. We teach the shit they don't teach us in school. Yeah. Or maybe they're teaching it to us in school, but the manner that they taught it, we tuned it out. Yeah. And today we're going to tune it in. And I'm going to wind you up, and I'm going to let you go. And we hinted at this in the soft open. But people want to know, what is going on in U.S. housing? Yeah, is there a crash? When are we going to see more inventory? When are mortgage rates going to come down? And what are going to be the driving factors? So I don't know where you want to go with that.
I will go with mortgage rates first.
Okay.
I wasn't a Fed pivot person since 2022, where I forwarded the labor market to be more important than inflation. We just did a presentation and I showed all these inflation charts, and the growth rate of inflation has slowed down a lot. I think a lot of people thought if that would happen, then mortgage rates would follow with it. Not the case, right? I think to me, the labor market has to break, because that's what the Federal Reserve really kind of wants. They want jobless claims to start picking up, and then they feel a little bit more confident about their dual mandate. So the fact that the Fed hasn't pivoted, but the labor market is still intact, that looks about right to me. In regards of price crashes, okay, this is year 13 for me. What I've done is I've listed every single year why people think home prices are going to crash. This is year 13 now. Apparently, sexless men in video games and the silver tsunami is the thing for this year. We keep it very simple. There's nothing in the history of economics over the last 500 years that say that if you have stable demand and low inventory and no distressed sellers, national home prices falling 20, 30%, not going to happen. In fact, if you go back to 1942, it's actually very rare in America to have nominal home prices crash. And, you know, kind of my token presentations is to explain to everybody why it is in 2008. And it's really simple. 2008 actually started back in 2002, right? We had this major credit boom, credit bust. But 2005, 6, 7, and 8, foreclosures, bankruptcies, they were all rising. Total active inventory, NAR, was 4 million in 2007. We had 4 years of credit stress all before the job loss recession happened. And then 2008 recession happened. And then the other things we just talked about today is that we have this weekly data, active listings, new listings. We keep people informed. New listings, the homes that are coming onto the market that do not have a contract, the last 4 years have been trending at the lowest levels ever recorded in history. So 2022, we had the biggest and fastest, almost a waterfall crash in home sales. But after November 9th, that all changed. That's kind of my token date. I said, okay, after this date, things should settle down. Home sales aren't crashing anymore. So it's very hard historically to find any period where you have stable demand, existing home sales are hovering at the low levels for some time now, and inventory low, monthly supply is only 3.2 months, active inventory is 1.1 million. It's hard to get a price crash national story with that. But we did have home prices fall in the second half of 2022 nationally, but that also came with the biggest sale crash ever. So until those variable changes, we get what we have right now. You know, I think a lot of people were shocked even in the last existing home sales report. They saw a year-over-year price growth with sales low and rates high. Just remember that the home buyers that are here right now, they're not as stressed as the home buyers when existing home sales were running at 6.5 million. Now we're at 4 million right now. So we're working from very slow levels. Inventory can grow with higher rates, right? That's our thing. We don't believe in the mortgage rate lockdown premise. We believe that higher rates, weakness in demand. Inventory can slowly grow. We're seeing that a little bit this year, but we're so far from normal levels. And literally, we do not have a distressed housing credit market right now. What? And in that light, it's just a very frustrating marketplace, but it's not a very active inventory marketplace.
What do you deem a normal level of inventory?
So going back to 1982, active inventory NAR data is between 2 to 2.5 million. We're at 1.1 million today.
Okay, so we're half the supply half that we need to be called normal.
To be like in the lower range of the 5-decade run. So yeah, so it's going to take a while to get back up there. But again, homeowners are doing good. It's a very simple thing. Fixed debt costs, rising wages. Americans live in their homes longer and longer. Over 40% homes don't have a mortgage. So the notion that what we call panic sellers is when I say middle-aged men stock traders. they would do that. They act like that. They get on margin calls and they got to sell. Homeowners can't do that because I would say it's very simple. Imagine you selling your house. You have to find somewhere to live. Most sellers are buyers, right? What buyer does not give you inventory? The first-time home buyer. So that first-time home buyer, 90% plus of their home purchases are mortgages. As they buy more homes, that inventory level has been falling for 10 or 15 years. A lot of this has to do with the qualified mortgage law that came in 2010.
So if I were to summarize that, no housing crash.
It is mathematically impossible to have a price crash with inventory here and stable demand. You need either inventory to increase with weakness demand, or you absolutely have a massive distressed sellers coming into the marketplace when a job loss recession. And just remember, forced equity sellers might be a better premise this time because 30-day late, 60-day late, 90-day late, 120-day late, notice of default. Supply, foreclosure supply will take about 9 to 18 months on minimum to get this to the marketplace. Our foreclosure data and delinquency data are near all-time lows. So that's like a 2025, 2026 story if it occurs, right? But you would need a job loss recession, unlike 2005, 6, and 7, 8. 4 years of massive credit stress will come in, then the job loss recession.
And there's nothing in the data right now that is even showing that people are starting to file for bankruptcy or not pay their bills.
They're all at very historical low levels, yep. Right? So we would need to see it get back to the 2005 levels to even talk about maybe here comes the wave of credit stress. So we just don't see that. And again, over 40% of homes don't even have a mortgage, right? So it's literally impossible to have like, you know, a foreclosure when you have that much equity. And the nested equity, the loan to values, are at the lowest levels ever. So you have all these different things that were not part of, you know, the 2002 to 2008 market. And qualified mortgage, to me, changed everything. Also, the 2005 bankruptcy reform laws changed a lot of things. So I like to explain all this stuff with my charts, because I think if people don't read, they can visually see the charts, and I draw these black lines to make it the clear, and they're going, oh, okay, I get it now. That's how it works.
So home sales have been a little bit abysmal. I mean, for someone who helps run a mortgage company, I'm looking at the home sales. When can we see that start to trend in a more favorable fashion?
So it's the third calendar year of the lowest home sales ever recorded in history. This is all true. And I say this with the fact that we have over 158 million people working now, right? This isn't like 2008. 2008 had a lot less people working. You need lower mortgage rates and have it stick. Whenever rates fall down, we get a little boost in demand, and then the Fed freaks out, and the rates have to go up, you know? So softness in the labor market, the labor market breaking, will give the ability for mortgage rates to stay lower for longer. And there could be your premise that, you know, purchase application data can grow with a little bit more stability.
So is that the key? Employment?
That's employment data getting softer until the Fed actually really pivots, which I don't believe they have. Softer employment data brings lower mortgage rates. All we have is some softening, but it hasn't broken yet. So jobless claims is like the main data line I track. When jobless claims start to take off, the bond market won't wait for the Fed. They're going to take that 10-year yield lower. The spreads are getting better in that situation. Then you can get 6% or sub 6% mortgage rates. Then you get more activity and it'll stick.
So in a weird, sick, demented way, if I'm a home buyer in today's market, you're kind of sitting back hoping some people lose their jobs.
Well, you need the labor market to get much softer. You need wage growth to cool down. You need job openings to cool down. These things actually will help mortgage rates. I mean, that's why I say I'm not a Fed pivot person. To me, all the Feds, everything they've talked about is attacking the labor market supply, and wage growth is still too strong for them, and the labor market is still too tight. When they see that labor weakness, jobless claims getting to 323,000 four-week moving average, then rates could go down and stay lower. That's the key.
So you're not in the camp that the Fed's really monitoring inflation. You think they're really monitoring?
They feel much more comfortable when the labor market is breaking and they can hide behind their dual mandate, right? Labor market and fighting inflation. This is why, you know, we just showed those charts. We see unbelievable improvement on the growth rate of inflation. but we had lower mortgage rates with hotter inflation data. You know, not a lot of people remember that in 2022, we had much lower mortgage rates. So when the labor market starts to get softer, the bond market will go down, rates will go down, and that'll be disproportionately benefit for housing. This is a good test case. Back in COVID, all my economist friends said, hey, listen, how do you think housing's coming back? We have 20 to 30 million people unemployed. And I was like, 5 million in forbearance. I was like, that's cute. I got 133 million Americans armed to the teeth with 3% mortgage rates. All they got to do is think about, okay, COVID's not going to kill me. Mortgage demand came back in six weeks. So
you said that in your presentation today, which, by the way, y'all, if you weren't able to make it out to the gathering, which I'm assuming you didn't because you're watching us on Instagram Live right now, or maybe you did come out to the event and you're watching this next week when we post it on YouTube, but Logan crushed it. Like, that's why you come to events like this, because at the gathering, you had your charts, you had your graphs, and you were like laying it out in what I think you called it, is it kid-friendly terms?
Yeah. Yes, my partner in crime with our podcast, Sarah Wheeler, says I need to talk to people like they're five, and I go, "Oh, milk and cookies talk."
Yes, yeah, okay. You gave us the audience. There's probably like 600 people in there. The milk and cookies talk,
milk and cookies version.
But
you're
telling me, as a guy who helps run a mortgage company for a living, until we start seeing weaker labor, the labor market weakening, right? I'm not probably going to see my mortgage rates get down to six or maybe even a five handle.
I mean, you would need softness from the, I mean, my whole Fed won't pivot stance is that the labor market in their minds is too tight still. So to get rates to go lower and stay lower, right? To get the spreads to come down more, you need that. And when that happens, the bond market will override the Fed. You know, they've tried to do it twice already, but the labor market hasn't broken on them yet. Then you could have a better case for lower mortgage rates. I think a lot of people got confused because they say, well, the growth rate of inflation falling, mortgage rates should fall one-to-one. That's not the case with the economy now and the global economy as well. So that's, I always tell people, follow jobless claims. When jobless claims start to tick up, there's a thing.
Sorry. 6 months ago, we were thinking, at least 7 out of 10, we're thinking we're going to have 5 rate cuts. Now that 5's been moved to 3, the 3's moved to 2, and now I'm reading and hearing possibly 0 in 24. What are your thoughts? What's your data telling you?
So if you want to know where rate cuts are, you want to find the 2-year yield, right? You follow that. And twice now in the last 18 months, the 2-year yield makes these really big moves lower, but thinking that the U.S. is getting into a recession or the Fed's going to have to pivot. Both times, the 2-year yield has retraced up. If the labor market was breaking, the 2-year yield's already going to go lower. So the bond market will get ahead of the Fed. But as of right now, jobless claims are still too low. Job openings are still high. The labor market is softening. Wage growth, right? The Fed kind of has this model. This is a geeky model. But 3% wage growth, 1% productivity, they like that. Right now, wage growth is a little bit above 4%. Productivity numbers are really good right now. They don't believe it. So when wage growth starts to get in the low threes, that's a very positive thing for mortgage rates, right? We're not there yet, but down the line, I think we're seeing the softness in the labor data start to pick up in terms of the quits percentages. The Fed hates people quitting their jobs and making more money, right? So they want to attack that. The quits percentages is pre-COVID. The hires are pre-COVID. So the labor market's getting softer. The softer it gets, the bond market will react more to it.
Are you willing to put a number on it, like 6 months out, 9 months out, if you were to guess?
Right now, the labor market is in the early stages of finally getting jobless claims. Oddly enough, every recession in America has residential construction workers lose their jobs. So all this inverted yield curve, all this stuff, it doesn't really work unless residential construction workers lose their job. Apartment permits are now down to the COVID-19 recession lows. We'll be going down to the Great Recession lows. So once those apartments are built, they lose their jobs, jobless claims start to go up. That's how every recession we've seen post-World War II kind of work. We just never had the residential construction employment data break on us. So we want to keep an eye on that, especially over the next 7 to 9 months. Because permits have fallen so much in the apartment construction, more of those things finishing will eventually lead to softer labor markets for them.
I love this. Logan, I know you have many places that you have to go. This is y'all's biggest event of the year. I'm grateful that you sat down with me and I was able to formally and officially introduce you to the TLOP audience. Besides going to housingwire.com, which y'all should, all of you, be going to housingwire.com. You should be getting their daily emails with their articles. How can people follow you, get copies of your graphs, hear you give your updates on the U.S. economy?
So we got a top 10 business podcast. Sarah Wheeler and myself talk twice a week, every Thursday and Monday. It's the Housing Wire Daily Podcast. You can get that in Apple or Spotify, but we also have a YouTube page. We go over everything that happens in the week. The Housing Wire tracker articles that come out at housingwire.com, that's the weekly tracker. So that data line gives you the weekly active inventory, new listings, price cut percentages. All of our stuff is fresh, gives us an unfair advantage, I say. It's ahead of a lot of people's data lines. And then we talk about the 10-year yield, mortgage rates, purchase applications. We've created a tracker model that we believe is more efficient than everyone else because it's well ahead. And if you really want to bore yourself out, Instagram, just my name. If you go on there every single day when I'm not in a conference, I talk about all the economic data, the 10-year yield, everything. My job is to teach economics, because if I teach, then all of you become the detective, not the troll, and then you understand economics better. You don't have to listen to those crazy people on YouTube. And this way, you can understand how cycles have worked in the past and what are we looking at in the future. So my name, Instagram page, YouTube, Housing Wire Daily, and housingwire.com. The tracker article has all the live, fresh information that a lot of Wall Street firms, real estate investors, and realtors use to give themselves a better edge in this housing market.
I love it. And while you're on YouTube and you're subscribing to their channel, make sure you've subscribed to TLOP if you haven't done so already. We have a newsletter that we put out every single week. And just about every single week, I reference my favorite articles in the news. Mm-hmm. And 7 out of 10 times, it's going to be a Housing Wire article that I'm referencing. Sure. So make sure you do that, y'all. There's a ton of free content out there. Stay educated, stay informed. That way you can continue to be the subject matter expert in the community that you served. I'm Dustin Owen. You've just tuned in to Loan Officer Podcast. He's Logan Motoshami with Housing Wire. That is all the time we have for you today, but we do look forward to catching you on the next episode. Peace.